Welcome to Write Books That Sell Now, the podcast helping you write, publish, and market your book faster, better, and smarter. Here your host, working hard and having fun doing it, Candace L. Davis, Anita Henderson, and Carol Dunlop.
Hey, we're so glad that you're here. This is the Write Books That Sell Now podcast, the podcast that gives you real insight into the real world of becoming a self-published author with an awesome book. I'm one third of the Write Books That Sell Now team, Carol Dunlop, and I'm here with my partners in success, Anita Henderson and Candace L. Davis. What's going on, ladies?
Hey,
how you doing?
All is well. Great to be here.
I am so happy to be here. I'm so excited about our guest that we have on today because unlike some of the people that we've had in the past, he is not technologically challenged and he's going to tell us some great stuff. I cannot wait. Coming up on this episode, we are going to share with you some of the secrets of book sales success on Amazon.com. Everybody wants to know that. Many authors are completely unaware that there are specific tactics and strategies that they can use to sell more books on Amazon. Believe it or not, it's not just luck. Today, we're talking with one of the world's top experts on how to sell on Amazon, and he's sharing some of his top secrets. But before we get to that, Anita, what is on your mind today?
Well, honestly, what's on my mind is like feeling like it. You know, sometimes you just don't feel like it.
Let me raise my hand. You know, feeling like anything,
feel like
I'm telling you.
Whatever. It is sometimes. And probably every day there's something that's on my to-do list that I don't feel like doing. I thought about this because I was communicating with one of the members of our Entrepreneurs Club Unlimited. And we were talking about fitness, how important it is for entrepreneurs to be fit, like wellness and fitness and all of that is such an important part of what we do as entrepreneurs. We have to be energetic. We have to get enough sleep. We've got to eat right and we have to exercise. And I was telling her that just some days I just don't feel like it. And I'm just back from a trip about a week on the road. And the whole time I was gone, I didn't work out. I walked a lot just as part of what I was doing, but I did not work out the entire time I was gone. And I was in hotels. They had nice fitness centers. I could have worked out, but I just didn't. And so now I'm back and forced to get back into my regimen. You know how it is. And Candace is laughing because I know she just came back from a trip also. And
that's
I don't know
true.
If you worked out while you were there. I know you worked while you were gone. But
well, I was lucky enough to be able to walk every day. That was it for me.
Well, God bless you. I was probably able to walk every day. I just didn't. So I guess, and I'm just talking about fitness for right now, but there's other things for us as entrepreneurs we just don't feel like doing. There are days when I don't feel like doing, you know, those top three things on my to-do list. There are times that I don't feel like making the phone call. I don't feel like writing the blog post. I don't feel like managing so much of what we do here at Write Books That Sell Now. I just don't feel like it. But the point is, we have to do it anyway, because for most of us as entrepreneurs, we're either doing everything ourselves or we're doing the bulk of what's involved in our business ourselves. So you may have a virtual assistant or a partner. I'm blessed to have two in this venture. Some other people who do some other things in your business, but the majority of what needs to be done, it's you. And it needs to happen whether you feel like it or not. So what do you ladies do to pump yourselves up to do the stuff you don't feel like doing?
You just do it, well, child. Yeah. I feel like that same thing this morning. Oh, my gosh, I was making breakfast and I felt like I really don't want to do this. I don't feel like doing the podcast recording today. I don't feel like, you know, just being on today. I don't feel like doing my hair. I don't feel like doing my makeup. I don't feel like doing anything. And I was standing there at the stove just thinking that very thing. And then, you know what? I thought, like, so what? You don't feel like doing it. If you don't do it, you know, I wouldn't get to meet Dave and his awesomeness. I wouldn't, you know, get to be out there like I need to be. And I just wouldn't get anything done. It was so funny you talked about working out because I didn't work out yesterday and I got up this morning. I was like, I'm going to work out. And as I rolled out of bed, I had my workout all planned and I did it. And then I felt immediately better. Yeah. So, you know,
me too.
That's my answer. You just got to do it.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Candace?
Well, girl. So my husband and I have, we have a saying because he's an entrepreneur too. He has a day job plus his entrepreneurial stuff. He probably has four jobs at any given time, right? Because he works in entertainment. He has various projects going on. I have various projects going on. We have deadlines all the time. And if ever one of us even looks like we want to say the words, I don't feel like it.
Oh,
our response is usually your feelings betray you. Before you can even get it out of your mouth, he will say to me, or I will say to him, honey, your feelings betray you.
And we'll laugh
because we know what that means. You can follow those feelings if you want to. You can, because that's what most people do, right? But if you want different results, you have to do what most people are not willing to do.
Amen.
So I try to shift my feelings rather than fight my feelings, you know, by thinking about, okay, what's the end result that I'm going for? What's the end game in this? I may not feel like sitting down and writing 5,000 words today for a ghostwriting project, but the end result is I get paid and I get another person out there who's going to be a wonderful mouthpiece for my business and refer me to other people, right? That's the end result. And I'm excited about that end result. So I learned how to get excited about writing 5,000 words.
Yeah, you focus on the end result. I think that's really important. Whether it is fitness, whether it is a project you're working on, or even if it's something as awesome as promoting your book and helping push it into number one status on Amazon, you think about that end result that you want and know that it's not going to happen if you do absolutely nothing. So feeling like it or not feeling like it is... beside the
Nobody
point.
Nobody cares.
Yeah. Focus on the end result.
Nobody cares if you feel like it or not. So I want to talk about our guest today because our guest is someone who I don't know what he feels like doing every day, but I can tell that he gets a lot done whether he feels like it or not. Today,
guest is
Dave Chesson of Kindlepreneur.com. If you're not familiar with the site, you need to get familiar with it. Dave describes himself as a husband and a father first. He has a beautiful family, first and foremost. But when he's not playing dress up or chasing the boogeyman out of the closet, he is an online entrepreneur and he specializes in Kindle ebook marketing, you guys. And even if you don't have an ebook yet, you're going to discover today why you should and what it can do for you. While he was still in the Navy, Dave spent his nights working on a side hustle, and that side hustle was online marketing. He started by creating niche websites and earning advertisement and affiliate commissions, which is a great way to get started. And after spending years practicing and learning SEO, search engine optimization, as more of an obsession than a hobby for Dave, he quickly expanded his website arsenal to 27 different sites, all of which were used for different online purposes and endeavors. But it wasn't until he discovered self-publishing on Amazon that Dave kicked all of this into the next gear. He combined his SEO knowledge and website development experience with Kindle Direct Publishing, or KDP, if you're not familiar with it. And that's where he found the place where he could really make a mark. I've been on Dave's list for a while. I don't even know how long. What I do know is that I love being a subscriber to his list. I follow him on social media because I'm always, always learning different things from him about how I can sell more books on Amazon. And he has tons of great resources on his website. I'm sure he'll tell you how to find those at the end of the show. Dave, welcome to the podcast. We are so glad to have you here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Seriously, it's a real honor.
It's our pleasure. So to get started, can you tell us a little bit more about your life and your journey to becoming really one of the most recognized experts in the world of Amazon publishing?
Oh, well, thank you. I'm kind of blushing on that. Well, I think a lot of it was trying to figure out exactly what was my definition of success. So like you said, I was in the military and I enjoyed serving. It was a great job. But the problem, though, was that the military kept sending me to the other side of the world without my family. Matter of fact, I think the last 4 years of my military service, three of those years was away from my children. Mm. So something had to happen. And when I sat down with my wife and I said to myself, hey, what is our definition of success? Like, do I want to be an admiral? Do I want to just continue down this 20-year road or whatever? And the truth was, that's not what would be successful. I'd have to sacrifice more time. I would have to be away from my kids. I would have to, you know, do this job that I didn't have an end goal for. And that's when I realized I needed to look for an exit strategy, something to be able to allow me to not only support my family, but more importantly, be with my family. And just getting out of the military and taking on another 9-to-5 job wasn't going to meet that. So we started looking, and being on the other side of the world, I couldn't start a brick and mortar. I couldn't go do and get another master's degree or something like that. But what I did find was that online, I had the ability and the flexibility to be able to continue being a dad, continue being a full-time, you know, Navy guy, and still build a business. And, you know, fast forward to 3 years from that point, I was able to say, thank you so much. It was great serving, but I'm ready to do my own thing. And so now I'm now here in Franklin, Tennessee, with my kids running upstairs. Hope you don't hear them.
Oh, wow. Sure enough. That's I was in Franklin last year. It's really beautiful there.
Oh, I love it. I really do. And there are a lot of really cool online personalities here as well, like Tim Grawl and Jeff Goins, which, by the way, I think in a couple of weeks, we're taking the kids to a Renaissance fair.
So. Oh, cool.
So it's just kind of neat. It's a great location. But like I said, the greatest part is that I'm here working at home, supporting the family. And a lot of that was from self-publishing and just building an online marketing skill.
Dave, I have a question before you. Sorry, Candace, before we go on. Mm-hmm. Because, Dave, you look like you're 12. I'm just saying. I mean, and I mean that in the best way. You just look so young.
It's a compliment.
So it is definitely a compliment. So do you exemplify the millennial people who are out there, or are you someone who's in this new generation that's like, I don't want to really work for anybody else. I really want to do this for myself, because you look awesome, but you look so young.
That's a really good question. Tell you the truth, I've never really thought about it like that. So I'm 33 years old. So
no way. No way.
I know. And it wasn't so much, I never went into this with this idea of I want to work for myself, or, you know, like, you know, get away from the nine to five thing. In truth, it was just more or less like I was just kind of bummed missing out on my kids' first words, or the time that they rode a bike. Like, Skype, thank God for whoever created Skype, that person or that group of people. Like, I owe them so much, because I got to see at least something. But it was just that whole point of, I didn't want to trade one sacrifice for another sacrifice. And I think that was the motivating factor. But I will say this. I don't think I could ever go and work for anybody ever again after all this.
Yeah, I know.
The ability
to
throw on a sweatshirt and sweatpants and slippers and go to work, go upstairs and have coffee with my wife and call it a business meeting. I am smitten. There's no way I could go back to it.
I know.
We totally get it.
And before I got out of the military, right before I did this full time, I actually used to work in the U.S. Embassy in Sri Lanka, doing this really, really fun job. But I mean, here I was with suit and tie, bow tie, because I totally wanted to rock the bow tie. and I was meeting with the ambassador all the time. I was losing my weekends because I'd have to go, you know, meet with some foreign dignitary. So to go from that lifestyle to loafers, you know, see my loafers, that's how I roll today. I'm loving it. So
one of the things, Carol and Anita, that you might pick up on about Dave that I've picked up on through his subscribing to his newsletter is that he is a bit of a nerd. You've heard Renaissance Fair and bow tie already. So,
and you got Darth Vader. There's a couple of Star Wars
evidence.
We all are.
Emailed him because he had sent out a newsletter and he had all these amazing Harry Potter references in it. And it just was like, okay, this is my people here. So Dave, tell us how a nerd like you. So how did you start your self-publishing journey? How did that begin for you?
Well, I'm going to tell everybody out there, I have never, ever labeled myself as a great writer, right? It's just never been my thing. When I was in high school, I remember my English teacher coming up to me, handing me back this D-minus paper. And she goes, Dave, you're going into physics, right? I go, yes, ma'am. And she's like, good call. She was an awesome teacher. I mean, she wasn't like mean, but she had a point. And I kind of liked physics for the purpose of one plus one always equals two. Mm-hmm. But in writing, I could try my best and create what I thought was awesome work. And some academic would look at it and be like, dude, seriously? Like, did you try?
I'm like, I tried. I did. I swear I did.
So it's all of my high school friends are cracking up that I actually am in the writing business. But that's not to say that I'm definitely not creating bad books, because my strength was being able to take very intricate or complex ideas and break them down into something that's very digestible. So I'm no Ernest Hemingway, but I'm definitely, I work hard to make sure that what I write is good enough. But what really comes to it, though, it's not about being a best author. It's being a best selling author, right? Hmm. So, you know, a great example of this is Guy Kawasaki. He was standing up on stage and he's given this great brief about his, you know, the plan and what people can do. And there was this professor that was in the audience. She came up to him after his speech. She says, like, Mr. Kawasaki, I don't exactly get it. Like, I've read your books and they're okay, but I've got a PhD in this and I give way more content, you know, than inside of your books, but I don't get it. You sell more. He kind of nods and puts his hands together and goes, well, that's because I'm not a best author. I'm a best-selling author. Mm. You know, he created a title that sticks with us, that we all know. He branded it. He worked the extra components, you know, outside of just writing a good book. And so that is why Guy stands up on the stage and the PhD academic is sitting there paying to listen to him.
Mm. Good right. point. Good point. Right. One of the Whoa. Things we talk about to our audience and Write Books That Sell Now is that you don't have to be the greatest writer ever in order
right here.
to be a good author. And so, yes, you've given us a great example of that. I love that.
And, you know,
yeah, for sure.
Another thing that really comes to it, though, is that when authors write their book, what they kind of see is that they see like 90% of their time should be on creating the book and 10% of their time should be on marketing it. But one of the things I've learned with online marketing in general, not just with books, not just with creating a really pretty website, whatever it is that if you do that whole 90-10 like that, you're only going to see 10% of the potential results, right? Mm-hmm. So what I tell people right, is exactly. that if you've created a great product, whether it's a book or software, whatever, you should be devoting like 90% of your time to get it out there to more people. Right. And so as an author, don't kind of look at it like, hey, you know, Field of Dreams here. If I write it, they will come. Okay. But definitely make sure you write it.
Right.
But ensure you have a good plan, a good strategy ahead so that you can get the book not only in front of people, but in front of the right people.
So what are some of the marketing strategies you share in your programs to help authors spend that 90% of their time marketing, selling, and getting the book to the right people?
Well, in book marketing, there's two strategies to it. Okay. I'm going to kind of oversimplify this, but I think it's really important to see it this way. Okay. The first strategy is that you are able to write this book and then you go find that market. Okay, wherever they are on the internet, and you grab them by the collar and you drag them to your book. Okay. That's mm-hmm. really hard. You either have to have incredible book marketing skill, right? Some kind of online marketing skill, whether that's like SEO like me or Facebook ad guru or AMS or whatever, right? Or you have a really large following. You have a giant email list. Okay. Somebody who's very famous, like, you know, like Pat Flynn, say, he's got like 200,000 people on his email list. He could write a book about putting on his pants one leg at a time, and he'd probably sell way more than all of us put together.
Right.
Right.
Build that list. Now, this is a great long-term thing that authors should think about, especially if they're taking this seriously, okay? That they should start building a skill or building their email list or whatever. However, let's look at the other way, okay? And this is super important for new authors. What I like to do is I like to go to the marketplace that I want to sell in. So in this case, Amazon. And I like to find out what Amazon shoppers are looking for, what they're willing to pay for, and where there isn't so much competition that I drown. And then I write that mm-hmm. book. So I find what the market is hungry for and I provide for them. Okay. So an analogy to this is, say, now let me, before I go into the analogy, let me say that this doesn't mean that you can't write the book that's inside your heart. Okay. I'm not trying to kill creativity and art, you know, and artistry here. Okay. What I am saying though, is you may tailor your message or your book to an existing market and it will do much better. Okay. Mm-hmm. An analogy, you are a public speaker. Okay. And you want to talk about, say, knitting, crochet, like that's the thing you want to talk about. But you find out you're going to be talking to this group of people and they're 16-year-old troublemakers who have a drug problem.
So yeah, let's teach them how to knit.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You may have a great speech. You may have this great presentation full of information. But if you know that you're talking to 16-year-olds with that kind of background, you can tailor your book so it truly fits to them. Okay. So you want to talk about the arts and intricacies of crocheting, but what you could talk about is potential of business, you know, how they can make money from their crochet so that they can pay for the, you know, the things that they were trying to pay for through drugs or whatever it was. You could then talk about, you know, how it can soothe the soul, how it can put them at peace. Like you can tailor your message so that it fits to that market. So to kind of recap on the two, you either have a skill and you find the market and you bring them back, all of that jazz, or you find out what market is right now wanting something and you provide for them. That last one is something that a brand new author with no skill can start and see success in.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And in the Right Books to Sell Now course, I talk about that in the summit, and I tell, one of the things I share with the authors or potential authors is that, you know, you have to be where your people already are, and you have to market to them in the way that they're accustomed to being talked to, marketed to. You can't just go, I mean, of course, you could go out there if you want to be on Facebook, but your audience is not on Facebook. You can go on Facebook and try to drag people over there, but it's so much easier if your people are on Twitter to go to Twitter and figure out how to use it to market it, because it's all about being a marketer now. Because it doesn't matter if your book is the, you know, it could be next to the Bible, could be just as good as the Bible is. If nobody reads it, they're not going to get anything from it. So I love what you said about, you know, go find the people and cater your stuff to them. Don't lose your creativity, but you can always find a way to market it to them, because your whole thing is about getting the message out there, right?
Absolutely. It's about being discovered. And when you're a new author, that's the hardest part, is how do I beat out all these others? How do I get, you know, in front of my readers? I say, know who your readers are before you write that book. Know who's hungry and willing to pay for it on Amazon. And by doing that before you even start writing your book, like that's the greatest motivating thing to finish your book, because you know that there is a hungry market out there. They're willing to pay for it. All you got to do is just create it. Instead of just kind of writing and hoping, you now have market data research to prove that there is a hungry paying market out there for your book. That's how I got into it. And that's why I've enjoyed it, because there's no way Mr. Non-Ernest Hemingway would be able to write something so awesome that it would spread like wildfire. I needed to know that there was the hungry market and I could provide for them.
Yeah, I like that approach, because you talk about the hungry market, and Carol always talks about the 2 a.m. problem, right? What is keeping people up at 2 o'clock in the morning? That's the solution that you're providing to people. And when you identify that hungry market, you're giving them what they want.
Absolutely. And it's so much easier to make that sales conversion, right? To get them to click on your book and then buy it, when you know you've written for them. Here's a great example, right? On how we can niche down to address a certain populace. A couple years ago, Evernote was like a big thing where everybody was writing books on how to use Evernote. But if you did the market research, you could find out that there are a lot of people that were just typing Evernote or how to use Evernote. There were a lot of people typing into Amazon Evernote for students, Evernote for authors, Evernote for project managers. So you may say, oh, but there's so many people typing in Evernote. Yeah, but there's a lot of competition. There's like hundreds of books that are targeting that. let me ask you this. If you were a student and you were looking for a book on Evernote and you saw one that said Evernote for students, wouldn't you be more likely to click on that one because it's talking to you? It fits you and your needs and problems?
Yeah, it's that specialization, that focus. And I think a lot of authors, unfortunately, find themselves challenged with that. They think, especially new authors, they think that if I narrow my market or narrow the focus of my book too much, whatever they think is too much, then I'm excluding people. Speak to that. Speak to this issue, this idea of excluding, you know, a vast majority of the market. We always tell people that what, however narrow you narrow your market down to, there's still millions of people in that target audience.
That's right. Well, to go even further, that was one of the biggest things for me is I don't like to write in faith. I don't like to kind of hope that there is a certain amount of people. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I devised a way in which to be able to figure out how many people per month type in a phrase into Amazon. So that way I can say, hey, you know, there's 1,400 people per month typing in Evernote for students. That's a big enough market for me to create a very niche book for them. And that's only the people that type it into Amazon. Right. Now, that data might be a little old because things do shift. However, though, if I were starting a book right now and I found that out, I knew that there are 1,400 people typing that exact phrase into Amazon. That's more than enough to tell me that I need to write that book, not the Evernote book I was thinking of, but an Evernote book for students. And now the 1,400 people that type that into Amazon will immediately find my book because Amazon's going to be like, well, this is the only book on that exact subject. Better put it at the top. But then other people who are just searching for the next Evernote and they come across and they're like, oh, I'm a student. That's probably the right one I'm looking for, and click it. And then it grows. So that's kind of what I'm talking about is it's not just thinking that there's a market. There are ways that you can go into Amazon and find out how many people are actually searching for that. So you can make data related answers. You can use real numbers to come up with real answers and have real potential.
Exactly. And Dave, we're going to get more into that because we're going to discover the secrets that help you come up with this amazing little fit that is making you quite a bit of money here. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break to acknowledge our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Are you ready to stand out from the crowd to fulfill your purpose and live the life you really want? Ready to spend more quality time with your family, serve more people, and love the work you do every day? You know you're meant for more, and now's the time to start living your dreams. It's time to fulfill your purpose, and we know just where you should begin. Authorpreneurs Club Unlimited, an online community to help you live the life you've been dreaming of. Join the movement today at AuthorpreneursClubUnlimited.com.
This episode is sponsored by Write Your Life, helping professionals and entrepreneurs be an author, be an expert, be amazing. Write Your Life offers expert author coaching and book production services to help you produce a phenomenal self-published book you can use to leverage your business and your brand. Visit them at www.writeyourlife.net. All right, we're back. Thanks, everyone, for joining us again. We're talking with, my gosh, our brains are just exploding because he's given us some wonderful, awesome information. And now what we promise you, we're going to dig into some secrets here. Although we've been kind of prying some stuff out of him, we're getting to the real deal because, as you know, my book is out there and I can't wait to hear. So, Candace, take it away.
All right. So I want to jump back to one thing really quickly before we dig right into the specific tactics and strategies. So Dave, a lot of times we have authors who come to us who are really excited because they hit bestseller status on Amazon. But the way that they're defining it is that in some subcategory of a subcategory for 5 minutes on one day, they were number 15. So earlier you referred to being a best-selling author. Could you be a little more clear about what that means to you?
Well, specifically for me, out of all of my books, every one of them except for one has been a bestseller for like number one bestseller in its category for at least 2+ years. So, cool. But that doesn't
that's
mean
a little different.
That's a little different. Yeah. And a lot of that's because I wrote books where I know people are typing that in every month. And so it's always making consistent sales, which is a huge thing for me. I'd much rather write a book that I know is going to be making me money a year or two later than one that only makes me money when I'm really hustling to push people to buy it. But, you know, it's kind of a weird situation because you were absolutely right. You said it, like there are some authors out there that'll make a big push. I think everybody who actually puts a little effort into it can be a number one bestseller in a category in Amazon. And by definition, that's true, right? If you are a number one bestseller, even for 2 hours, you were there. You can screen capture that if you want, and you've got proof. That's There's right. nothing to deny it. So I'm not putting down anybody who hits that only for 2 hours. Nor would I judge. I don't like to cast stones in that respect. And the funniest thing about it too, I'll just put this in here. When I first started all this and I told my grandmother that I was going to quit working for the military, and I come from a very strong military family, grandfathers, great grandfathers, all of them, right? She looked at me and the next thing she's like, "Are you okay? Do you need money?" And I was like, "No, Grandma, we're fine. We're fine." It wasn't until like, and I had to tell her, I'm like, "Look, Grandma, I'm a multi-bestselling author." And then at that point, she's like, "Oh, I get that. Okay, that's cool." You know, and it's like, "You're doing great." Yeah. It's like, she understood that bestseller term. I had to say it off my
if mag. That matters to grandma, it matters to the marketplace.
Yeah. Well,
it does. And a lot of times, you know, what's funny is that if somebody says, "Hey, I'm a best-selling author," how many people stop them in their mid-sentence to be like, "On which market?" You know, New York Times,
for how long?
Right. US and Today.
How long did you reach bestseller status?
Yeah, the issue that we find is a lot of the authors, they hit bestseller status because they've paid someone to help them do it or to give them the strategy to do it, but then they don't sell any more books. They hit the status and they're really excited about it, but then their book sales take an almost immediate dive and they don't sell any more books. So what are some of the things that authors can do? Starting, you mentioned categories. How do they select the right categories to help improve their book sales, or does it really matter?
Well, and let me step back before I answer that question and just say too, there are a lot of authors who really just want to get that check in the box, right? For example, if you're a speaker, it means a lot to be able to then put on your speaking resume or on your one pager that best-selling author, right? So who cares if I make that money? I just need to get that check in the box. And that's okay too. There are a lot of people who have really worked hard to do that. I would only say the best thing for those guys is try to make sure you're a bestseller in a category that's legitimate to your book. Which brings me into answering that question. Did you guys know that there are over 4,700 categories in Amazon, and it's growing every day?
Wow.
Amazon seems to enjoy this niching down in their categories. The thing is that authors really only see about 1,300 of those. The rest are kind of like, you can only find them by finding books that actually rank for them. They don't even give you that opportunity to select it. So what I mean by this is that when you go to publish your book for the first time, right, you're in your KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing dashboard, and you're about to hit publish, Amazon will ask you to select which categories you want to show up for. These are that 1,300 I was talking about. And actually, I think it's a lot less than that. But those are the only ones you get to select. Most authors select from there, and that's it. They never do anything else after that. But guess what? Find more niche categories. And when you find them, just email Amazon and say, "Please include this book to these categories." And Amazon, here's the cool part. Amazon will just add the category. They won't take away one. They'll actually add one. And you can actually get up to 7 categories by doing that. So you can have your book shown up for 7 different categories, not just the 3 that you see everybody else on.
Wow, cool.
Wow.
So there's a little hot tip.
That's worth the price of admission there. Wow.
So,
so the next thing, right, is how do we choose the right category, okay? And this is all about the magic number called Amazon Bestseller Rank, ABSR, okay? If you go to any book, you click on the book, and you scroll down to just above where they list the categories, there's that number, the Amazon Bestseller Rank. This is a number that ranges from 1 to 4.7 million, which is the total amount of Kindle books that are out there. One being the best-selling Kindle book in all of Amazon, 4.7 million being the worst. You can look at that, and so long So if the number one best-selling book in a category has 100,000 as its Amazon bestseller rank, to be number one in that category, all you have to be is just one under
99,000.
Thank you. I kept wanting to say like 999,000. Like, just want to say I haven't had my coffee yet. All you got to do, yeah.
Oh, darn.
99,999. And guess what? You're the number one bestseller. Because it's all about having a better ABSR, or better yet, better way to say it, is a lower ABSR than the number one bestseller. Okay. So to find the category that will allow you to become a number one bestseller is to find the one that has a number one bestseller that has a really bad ABSR. So this is where it kind of gets a little funky, is that some people will write a book about stress relief and then they'll go and find the niche category of mathematics in high school and they will select that. And well, you know, it's like, come on, you're not a, no, come right. on. That's not yeah. cool.
It's a stretch.
Amazon's yeah. not very good at checking things. I heard there are humans that work there, but I have yet to see it. I think it's next to the category of Sasquatch sometimes because come on. But yeah. maybe they'll catch up to it later. But hey, maybe it takes them like 2 or 3 weeks. So all of a sudden, oh, best-selling author. And yeah, for mathematics. So this is one of those where I say, you know, to everybody listening to this, there is the tactic, but please don't abuse it. Use it right. Try to find a legitimate category for you. And there are 4,700 out there. I'm sure there are some easy to be number one bestseller categories out there that still fit your book. Just do a little work. Look at all the books that you're competing against. Look at the categories that they show up for and find the one that's got the easiest ABSR to beat out. That's how you become a best-selling author legitimately and morally.
That's strategic. I like that. I like that. Now, does that also help you remain in that best-seller status in that particular category? For you talked about many of your books have been there for multiple years.
Yes and no. So I'm not that much of a lover of categories, right? There are some authors that are very big on categories, and a lot of writers really focus on categories because they want to tell their friends they're a best-selling author. But there's only two times that being a best-selling, right, a bestseller actually helps you to make more sales. The first is when you're the number one bestseller in that category, okay? And the reason why that helps, not the way you guys are thinking about, but because you get that little tag right under your title that says bestseller. Is that not great social proof or what, right? If I'm looking at
right.
the book,
yeah.
hey, this is a bestseller. And the cool part is Amazon doesn't say bestseller of mathematics. They just say right. bestseller. So I think that increases your conversion rate. So people will see your book and they'll be more likely to click because yours stands out with that bestseller tag. Mm-hmm. So that helps.
Right.
The other time that I care about categories is if I can rank in the top 20 for a very popular category. Okay. There are two ways that shoppers find the books they're looking for. Either A, they type it into the search results, right? The search bar at the top and they see it. Or B, they have this category they love and they go to that category and they look at the latest 20. I do this for sci-fi military. I love sci-fi military books. I'm a total uber nerd on it. And I go to the sci-fi military category probably once a month and I look for my next book. If you're in the top 20, you're getting in front of me, an avid buying reader, and that's a good thing for you. But you're not going to get sales when you're ranking number five for mathematics. I mean, how many hungry math? I mean, I'm a nerd. And let me tell you, I don't go to the mathematics category and look for my next book. Good Lord.
Right, no. right.
So if you can do one of those two things, then great. But let me tell you, it's, yeah, maybe you can hold the first one, which is bestseller. But it's going to be super rare to find and rank for a popular category. So what I like to focus on isn't so much categories. I think they come with sales. Instead, I like to make sure that my book is found the first way. which is when people type in a particular term, my book shows up right at the top so that those people can see it. So when somebody types in Evernote for authors, boom, right at the top. If they type in Evernote, boom, somewhere at the top, right? That is getting my book in front of more eyeballs, and more importantly, the eyeballs that I think are perfect for my book. And that increases sales, and sales improves ABSR. Improving ABSR improves category. So I kind of look at that as like the tail end. I look at making sure my book is found. That's the first thing for me.
Fabulous.
I love that.
Now, does this strategy work best, or does it matter whether you use it as right when your book comes out? Or I'm sure we have some authors in our audience now who are watching and listening who have written their books, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months ago. Could this same strategy, could they go back and make adjustments to get that ranking for those older books?
Most definitely. So let me step back. So we're sort of talking about keywords, right? And so keywords are the words that you want Amazon to show your book, you know, when somebody types it in, right? So if you want to show up for Evernote for authors, then your keyword is Evernote for authors, and you get to select seven of them. But let me step back though. Most authors do their keyword research before they go to hit publish. And what we talked about originally in this was doing that kind of research before you even start writing, right? Keywords ultimately are the words that the shopper types into Amazon when they're looking for their book. So if you do that research before you write your book, you know you're writing a book where there is an existing market. Use that keyword research when you go to publish your book so you get it in front of that market. So technically, this research we're talking about is pre-writing and right at publishing. And if you've done that research well and you implement those keywords into your book will show up in front of shoppers every month when they type that in.
Fab. I love it. I love it. I love it. So I want to know then. Oh, did you have a question, Candace?
No, you go ahead, Anita. Mine can
well,
wait.
I was just going to ask Dave, particularly with the process that you're talking about in the pre-writing and the writing, what's your writing process? How long does it take? So once you've done this research to find out what people are searching for, and then you write the book, how long does it take you to write it and get it up?
Well, that's kind of a funny question because I'm sort of one of those guys that likes to work on lots of projects at the same time. Sometimes I will crush out a book, you know, really quickly because I'm on fire and I seem to have that passion as I write it. I've got one book that I'm really excited about that I've taken like 2 years to write.
Oh, wow.
I've worked on other projects while, but this one's kind of a passion project that I think is going to be pretty cool. And so I'm not a very good person to ask that question because I probably break all the rules that all the really good and effective writers say not to do.
Well, we would probably say it shouldn't take you 2 years, but if you're doing multiple projects at one time, we get how you shift from one to the other. But
well,
I'll
go ahead and kind of give a lot of the details about it right now. It's specific to language learning. So when I was in the military, I was actually a China specialist for the Navy, and I'm fluent in Mandarin Chinese, but I had to go through all these language schools. I also grew up in a French immersion school because we lived in Canada. And so I've really wanted to write about language learning, but more importantly though, I'm a major history buff. So I've been doing a lot of research to not only talk about like seven laws to learning languages fast. I didn't just want to write about that. What I wanted to do was find, really cool history lessons where this lesson I'm talking about was utilized in something real. Like, for example, there was when the Jesuits were trying to enter China for the first time way back in the 1700s, where, you know, the emperor of China was like, foreigners, stay away. They were trying to learn Mandarin Chinese, but they couldn't do it. And so finally they set up this one guy and he used this one particular tactic that I'm talking about in the book. And within 6 months, he basically invented pinyin, which is how we Westerners learn Chinese. And the emperor was so enthused about this guy that he made him a right-hand man. So we literally went from exiled outside to come chill with me up on the throne here, all because of this one topic. I think that's a much better and cooler way to teach than just, well,
that's awesome.
The way you do it is this. So it's been a lot of research for that one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess I wonder then, in the time that it takes you to research those keywords, kind of that pre-writing research that you do on for Amazon, and the time it takes you to actually get to publish, has that changed much? I mean, I don't know if my question is making sense. The time that it takes between the initial research that you do on those keywords, and you know, you get a number of how many people search for that term, those terms, and the time you actually get that book up there, have those numbers changed? Is it enough to say, oh gosh, hopefully, obviously it doesn't discourage you from writing on that topic. I'm sure those numbers don't dwindle astronomically, but I'm hoping that they stay pretty much the same so that you're like, yeah, I was right on track, or it's grown or something.
Well, that really depends on which area you're writing on. Like, for example, we talked about Evernote for Authors, and that was one that I was doing. We were creating this really cool book for us and everything. But what happened was the numbers did drop because Evernote started doing that really weird paid program thing, and they changed up their user agreement, and all of a sudden, like, the care of using Evernote, like, dropped. So it's like, all right, well, there goes that idea. We're probably just going to make it into a free book for people, but really? Come on. Same thing with, like, you know, politics. There were a bunch of authors that totally rode the wave on our crazy election. But guess what? They're not selling as much as they were now. So there are things that come in, in waves and cycles. And if you can be the first and prepare for something like that, you can definitely ride that wave nice. Yeah, sometimes the numbers do change, and but there are a lot of subjects that just don't change with time either. So, you know, when I do my research, I still use Evernote, go figure. And a lot of it's when I just come across an idea and I'm like, all right, save that one. You know, let's put that in the history lessons for language. I haven't even titled the book yet, but whatever that is. And we'll come back to that. I had a fun idea a while ago where, you know, again, I'm terrible at grammar, and my editor, oh, God bless her soul.
she's used to it by now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, grammar, what's that? And she's like, oh, Dave, I'm going to kill you.
That's so why I pay you the big bucks, copy editor.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why we need copy editors.
I wanted to kind of create a book for people like me who hate grammar and make it as entertaining and as funny as possible. Like, you know, like, I don't know if you guys have seen those comic strips where it's like, let's eat grandma and let's eat grandma, right? Commas save lives. Like, that's how I could learn and get along with grammar, right? So I've been collecting a whole bunch of, like, examples that are hilarious to kind of, you know, make people like me chuckle. And maybe I'm going to title it something like Down with Grammar Nazis, Up with the Illiterate. Woo! You know, the grammar book for people like us.
So you got to know that Candace and I are both total grammar Nazis. We're grammar geeks.
Yes.
I'm hoping that that's the one where the high schoolers and, you know, the college kids are like, all right, this is speaking my language, you know, and through funny meme type, you know, pages, they'll actually be able to retain the information instead of, like, reading that bore. Like, I still don't know the difference between affect and effect. I kind of do, but
yeah, that's one of my sticklers. I have to check it every time.
And I'm putting myself down a little bit, but I also want everybody listening to know that you don't have to be perfect,
right?
Yes. If you write with passion, if you know what you're doing and you know that there's a market for it, that's cool. Nobody's going to stop you. When you're giving that speech to those kids and the kids are like, yes, this is awesome, nobody's going to be like, dude, that's an incorrect term. Like, no, they're loving what you do. So do that.
I want to ask another question. I know you guys have tons of questions too. I'm just jumping in here. But I want to know about on your insight, Dave, on branding. Now, so your brand is Kindlepreneur, but you're talking about writing books in a variety of different topic areas. What do you say to authors who actually have an existing brand? They don't want to write all over the place. They may have different interests, but how do they ensure that the books they're writing, to make sure that they are appealing to those audiences that they've done the pre-research for those keywords, how do they make sure that those are fitting into their existing brand and that they're not all over the place writing all these different book topics?
Oh, great question. And two parts to this. Either one, if you've branded yourself, then you already have an audience. And that fits in that marketing category we talked about, right? Where, you know, you've got the market, you know how to bring them to your book, aka email or whatever it be. And so you can just about write anything you feel is the right fit for them. Some of the big authors will send out, you know, questionnaires or surveys to their email list and generate the best book idea from that. With regards to keywords, though, again, like, hey, it's not, like I said, it's not stopping you from writing the book inside your heart, but it's just knowing how the existing market is searching for your kind of book. And just knowing that will get your book in front of more people. Mm-hmm. Now, this tactic, okay, it doesn't mean that, hey, this is everybody's going to make $1 million because he used this. Most of the time, what you're going to find out is that there is no market on Amazon. So I'm not trying to sell a silver bullet here. What I'm trying to tell people is that if you do the research and you find out that there's nobody typing these words into Amazon, there's nobody on Amazon looking for your kind of book, it doesn't mean you can't write the book. But what it does mean is you can't depend on Amazon to sell the book for you. Instead, you've got to 100% solely depend on this other tactic we talked about, which is finding the market and dragging them to your book. And if you're not prepared to do that, then you need to ask yourself, why are you writing the book? If you know that nobody's looking for it on Amazon and you don't know how to, or you don't have that capability, then prepare for this book not to be financially successful. But again, to step back, like I said in the beginning, is your long-term goal is to develop this, right? Develop that following, develop that email list, develop that skill. And it's okay if you have that book. Once you develop that skill, you can link it. And then you can make those sales later on. So I'm not saying that there is a market on Amazon for everything, but we as authors should definitely look ahead and know without a doubt if there is or isn't a market. And that will dictate how we market our book upon publishing.
Such a good point.
So Dave, I don't want to let you go because we've talked about keyword research so much and we're so fast running out of time. I feel like you just came on. Can you tell authors how they can actually do that? Because I can tell you, honestly, when I first started writing, I heard about keyword research and I was just clueless. And so I just didn't do it. I mean, and this was like 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, it was a long time ago, maybe longer. And I was thinking, okay, yeah, I need to do keyword research. So I'm typing things online. I have no idea how to do it. Is there something or some way to make it easier?
Yeah. So let me give you guys kind of the free way. Right. So that you kind of know of ways that you can go about this. The first thing is that I love the fact that Amazon gives us suggestions when we start typing something into the search box. Right. So these aren't just random words that Amazon comes up with. These are words that Amazon has seen other people type in. Now, to do this correctly, let me give you guys a hot tip. If you are doing that, right click on Google Chrome and open it up in incognito mode. Okay. What that does is that it kind of hides you so that Amazon doesn't use your account information or your previous searches when they're giving you suggestions. Hmm. Instead, Amazon's like, who the heck is this guy? All right, let's just give them history data. And that's the most raw, perfect data. So if you have an idea, like say, for example, you start typing in Space Marines into Amazon, Amazon will then drop down Space Marine Battles, Space Marine Warriors. And guess what? Those are words that shoppers have typed in and they're trying to finish my sentence with the stuff they've seen that converts. So that's a great way to find out if people are actually typing it in, is starting to type it and see if Amazon suggests it. But that's only kind of half the coin. The other side of the coin is that you need to make sure that books that show up for those words are actually making money. So if you type in your potential keyword into Amazon and you look and you see that none of the books are making any money, they're not even selling, then you know that it's not a good keyword to target. The way you do that is to click on the books, scroll down, and look at the Amazon bestseller rank that we talked about, the ABSR. Now you might not know what that number means, but we created a free calculator on Kindlepreneur, called KDP calculator. Just type in Kindle calculator into Google and it'll show up number one. And then put that Amazon bestseller rank into it and it will tell you how many books per day that book is selling. So now you know how much money per day that author is making. And if you see that they're all making a lot of money, That looks like a pretty popular keyword and popular niche. And then finally, the third thing to do that is to look at the competition. If those 10 books that show up for that keyword are like Stephen King, you know, and yada, you're Dunbar, right? That's competition over top. Not going to happen. So what I like to look for is, okay, these are words that people are typing into Amazon. Awesome. That people are paying money for those books. Double awesome. And then the triple, the trifecta, is when I look at those books and I'm like, wow, that's a terrible cover. Ugh, that's not exactly tailored to this market. Ugh, this person does not know how to write a description. And then I know that I can create a better book. And by creating a better book than the competition, I'll get better clicks, better sales, and better rankings. And when I'm ranking at the top, I make the top sales. So all of that seems crazy. And one of the things that we did at Kindlepreneur was we created a software called KDP Rocket that does everything I just said with a click of a button. So you would type in your initial idea and it will quickly pull all of the Amazon suggestions and also Google suggestions as well. We throw that in there just in case there's a new niche out there that hasn't been tapped. And it will tell you how many books are competing for that term, the average amount of money that the top books are making, the number of searches per month on Amazon for that exact term, and the competition level from 1 to 100. So you can now quickly see that, hey, this is more competitive than this one. And you can make decisions that way.
So essentially, if I use KDP Rocket, I can save myself hours of research is what you're saying.
Yeah. And yeah. The most important part is you get to know the estimated number of people that type that term into Amazon. You can't find that anywhere else. And what that will do is immediately tell you, hey, there are only 200 people a month typing this into Amazon, but there's 800 people a month typing that into Amazon. And it's even less competitive. Wow. So you can start to see the numbers and make good business-like decisions on your book even before you start writing it. Or more importantly, like I like to tell people, it can also let you know there just isn't a market on Amazon for that. And if KDP Rocket stops you from writing one book that was going to flop, it paid for itself in a heartbeat. Exactly. And it's only $97. It's a one-time fee, so it's not a subscription. It's yours for life.
Wow. That's a pretty darn good deal.
And how do we get that? How do we get a hold of that KDP Rocket?
If you go to kdprocket.com, it's right there, and you can pick it up, and it will be right in your inbox ASAP.
Wow. Dave, awesome. You have been so awesome. I can't even tell you how much I've learned in just this 45 minutes that we've had you on the show. I've been on your list for a long time, and I'm always learning things, but it was really fantastic to actually have you on and be able to ask you questions directly. Mm-hmm. Before we let you go, can you tell our viewers and listeners how they can find out more about you and the awesome, we didn't even get to talk about your Amazon book description generator. It's a free resource Dave has on his website. It's a ton of resources on there. Can you tell our viewers and listeners how they can find you?
Sure. If you go to kindlepreneur.com, I've got a contact page there. If you have any questions about anything I talked about, maybe I went a little too fast or I glossed over something that you want to know more about, hit me up there. To this day, I still answer all of those. I usually spend like my first 3 hours of the day answering them. But yeah. Wow. And more importantly, if you do have a question, just let me put it out there. Have a specific question. And I will more than happy give you a very specific answer to it. I get a lot of people like, how do I make more money with books? It's like, well, I kind of got this whole website on it. Like, but I will give you my best effort.
That is
I love that.
I love that. Thank you so much.
No problem. And again,
we have enjoyed it. Yeah. We've enjoyed you being here. You've been awesome. You're fantastic. Thank you to Candace for connecting with you, and thank you for being authentic and being open to connections. Because we find people who are successful beyond their wildest dreams and whatever kind of forget about where they came from or how they help people. But I can definitely see that you haven't forgotten that at all. And you are just a great dude. I like you.
Thank you so much. I'll end with the, when I first started out, it was the people who took the time to respond or answer questions. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to do that, but it meant the world to me when somebody did that. So, I've always made it a part of what I call internet karma. Treat people right and good things happen. And more importantly, I like to pay it forward. So, you know, hopefully if somebody gets a lot of benefit from what I'm saying or doing, please turn around and do the same, especially when you hit your success and you're up there and everything, you're doing your thing. Just remember that and pay it forward to the next generation.
That's fantastic. Wow. Thank you so much. We're going to jump to Anita now, and she has a shout out to an independent author out there who she wants to give a little bit of publicity to today.
I do. You guys know we always do a shout out. And this particular author was a guest on the podcast a while back. Her name is Heather Rogers. And the title of her book, that's hard to see. Sorry for the glare, everybody. But the title of her book is A Simplified Life, How to Achieve Order and Calm So You Can Regain or Reclaim Time, Energy, and Control. A Simplified Life. Heather is a professional organizer. And her book is there. It's available in print and on Kindle. And she really goes into detail in a fun kind of way, in a humorous kind of way, about how to just really organize your life for optimal enjoyment. Again, she's a professional organizer. She touches on, you know, when you're ready to kind of do the yard sale, garage sale, how to get rid of stuff, how to organize your life if you're scaling down, if you're downsizing your life, if there's a new family member, whether through marriage or a new baby or grandma moves in. I mean, she talks about all kinds of stuff, as well as time management in your life, just optimal functionality for you and your family to make sure that your life is amazing. So the book is A Simplified Life. The author is Heather Rogers, and you can find it on Amazon and on in print. And she is amazing. And her website is simply organized. And she's just phenomenal. She's a great, great author. And she is actually a client of ours. And so we're excited to see her succeed. So that is our shout out for this episode.
Yep. We've come down to an end to another great episode. We want to thank everyone for joining us today. We want to definitely thank Dave, man, wasn't he awesome? So what we would like for you to do is to visit us at writebooksatsalenow.com/thepodcast and leave us a review. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher. We're just everywhere. The main place you can find us is on the website. And we want you to leave us a great review, because don't we give you great content? Yes, we do. So leave us a review. And stay tuned for more stuff just like this. So we'll see you all next time.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Find out more about becoming an author and making the most of your book at writebooksthatsellnow.com.